Buried is produced and distributed by KETR.org and is supported in part by its fans and listeners who visit KETR.org and click donate. Sponsorship opportunities for Buried are available from KETR.org/buried.
It's the Buried Lead from KETR.org. I'm Buried's producer, Jared Knight, and joined by the host and principal reporter, George Hale. Hello, George.
Hey, Jared.
So we are back in a position where another three episodes has passed, and we need to sort of look backward before we look forward. We're talking about episodes 10, 11, and 12, which were a tromp through the woods.
Yeah.
Which was a fun experience, I'm sure. Looking for heaven only knows and not finding it. And then episode 11, which was your pleasant interaction with law enforcement in Hunt County. And mm-hmm. then, of course, your visit with Cody in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, but on the telephone.
Right. Yeah.
Down. You're not an in-person trip to about a block away from where he was in order to chat on the phone.
Yeah, I could see the building where he lived while I talked to him on the phone, but that's fine. I mean, he's not under any obligation to
see like silhouettes moving around Home Alone style while you visit.
Yeah. I mean, I actually did have to go there to meet him, though, because the only way I found him was by leaving my business card at his mother-in-law's house. So,
with regard to the visit through the woods, I thought it was pretty thorough an episode. We had an opportunity to hear lots of different locations that you visited that day.
Yeah, I sort of created that as like a thinly veiled recap episode so that everyone would remember Cody's property and some of the things about that, but without having to use any old audio. So, you know, we used new audio to show basically all the different things that we've learned over the last year, sort of on like a audio tour,
right?
You know, so
you didn't go on to the property at that time. Obviously you were looking from
beyond the fence. Right. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to see like all of the different opinions that exist even within their family about, you know, that piece of property. And then of course, you know, you heard two episodes later Cody basically just laughing about, you know, the notion that there's a woman or a car buried on that lot, and, you know, saying dig it up, take a look, you know. So it's obviously like a totally different, coming from two totally different places, you know, someone who's on one side really suspicious and convinced that there's something about it, and the other one who's thinks it's basically a joke.
Well, you've speculated time and again on the series that you think that the reason, stop me if I'm wrong, you think that the reason that there's such wild speculation about what might have happened is because everyone was very tight-lipped about what did happen, and not a lot of people were willing to share a lot of information about anything, even the facts surrounding Carrie's disappearance in 1991.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, everyone's heard about this property, but no one knows why. No one can remember where, you know. It's a... I mean, of course, the Parkers know where, you know, and we mentioned that in the podcast before. They learned about this from several places. One is Carrie's father, who said that she was afraid that Cody was digging a large hole there right before she disappeared. And then we have Stacy, the hitchhiker, who tells Glenn that that's where she's buried. According to Glenn, according to her, maybe buried, you know. But either way, she had suspicions about the place. And so, it's one of those, I don't know, it's a weird thing, because you have just, Cody saying, go dig it up, and Trisha saying, can we dig it up, and no one's digging it up, so.
To be fair, Cody and his family are no longer associated with the property.
Yeah, of course, but, I mean, that's only recent that they sold it in the last couple of, the people who own it now were close to to Cody's family, so I sort of, like, I should do a better job in my mind, like making a distinction, but it's hard to, because I know that they shared so much and they, you know, rented it out to each other. And but that's for another day.
Speaking of another day, there was another day represented in episode 11, where you got to visit with a number of folks there at the Hunt County Sheriff's Office. How much would you like to share about that?
On
a scale of 1 to 10.
I love reliving that day. It was peak awkward for me, I think. Anyone who's ever...
Our guest knows that you had forgotten whenever we sat down to record that was even what that episode was about. You had mentally blocked that day.
Exactly, yeah. We had to restart the recording because we said in now episode 11, which is about... What was that
what
about?
What was that?
but of course, yeah, that was the... actually, why don't you tell them, Jared, even though I haven't mentioned this to you, turning the tables right now.
Sure.
What was your reaction to that episode when I walked into the office and told you what had just happened?
Well, as we hear in the episode, there's a discussion between you and a news director at KETR, Mark Haslett, about what had just occurred. And you can hear Mark sort of explaining that he was going to have to bring it to me, which is just standard. You know, this is a thing. It involves an outside agency. You know, we got to run it up the chain or whatever. And so, sure enough, the next day, and this is not in the recording, but the next day, the three of us visited and talked about what had happened. I kind of got, you know, from you what was going on with regard to, you know, essentially the accusation that was being made that you had somehow participated in what was, at the time, being called incorrectly criminal activity. And so we were just sort of getting our heads around whether or not you had done a thing that was criminal, and none of us could really piece that together.
Well, I don't think any of us thought that I had.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying is is there a case? I mean, that's our obligation is like, is there something?
I think it's worth checking into if the police say that. Yeah.
Right. Well, and two, we had the opportunity because we were at the level of. At the time, there's no guarantee that anything about this is actually going to be published by KETR.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it wasn't one of these things where we got to get this on the air now and all of these things are really high pressure scenario. At the time, it was, you know, is this something that's going to derail the project eventually or not? And so I remember at the time, without going into too much detail, that we did seek some advice from an outside entity that was able to provide valuable sort of
reassurance, legal reassurance.
Well, so to speak, without actually giving us any legal advice, basically saying, well, here's kind of what your standing is. And so we felt a little bit more confident knowing that what we were actually dealing with was an organization that cared a whole lot more about the fact that they thought and may still think that they have a leak when the fact is that they don't have a leak.
Right. If
they had a leak, the leak would have been tapped, the access would have been sold, people would be, you know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of questions that would probably have answers if there were a reliable leak to the press or to individuals or whatever else within that organization. But the fact is that most of the things that people want to know, they have to go through regular channels to get to.
Yeah.
And so all we can do is reassure that it's not a leak. That's not what happened. But anyway, so we had that conversation. We learned about that. And my reaction at the time was, were you able to record it? You know, because this is definitely, that would make an interesting twist in the overarching story. At that moment that you had essentially been tricked into an interrogation room and then ultimately interrogated whenever you under the guise of let's participate, let's work together, let's share, you know, I'll tell you what you know, you tell me what you know what I mean, or vice versa. And we'll make sure that everybody's on the same page, and if there's anything, you can fill in any blanks for us. And unfortunately, today, a year and a half after that happened, I think that there's still plenty of blanks that you could fill in.
Oh, for sure. Certainly.
If that organization was showing any interest. Yeah. So, long story short, it was definitely kind of a surprise, but it was something that news organizations deal with from time to time. You know, there are definitely going to be
it's just not usually like recorded, you know, in the room. And like,
so what ended up eventually happening at the time, we didn't know this, but what ended up eventually happening, he did say that the record, there was we always make a recording, especially when dealing with cold cases, like that was early on in the recording. And what had actually happened was that, as a matter of course, they did roll videotape and audio recording of the interrogation, because that's what it was. And so through the Public Information Act, you actually were able to gain access to that high quality video and audio recording that they made that day. And then you know, for the sake of better telling the story of what happened, because that's what this whole entire project is about, is telling the story of what happened. And so we were able to tell the story of what happened using recording that they made of the events that transpired that day.
I'm not sure that we would have, though. I mean, it's hard to, like, hindsight, you know, is different. But if we actually had a sit-down interview with him, with Jeff Haynes or Randy Meeks or any of these people in a studio, high-quality, you know, calm, quiet, like, discussion, serious conversation, I wonder, though, if we would have actually ever used that. Because, I mean, for me, the reason that I stuck it in, you know, my plans is that it's all I had, you know. In terms of like a conversation about the case with the detective.
As what you're saying is, if what had happened that day was everyone sat down and said, here's what we know. And they're like, well, we didn't have that. That's very helpful. You know, or, hey, you know, we have you heard this? Because we were able to confirm it. Well, and this, you know, I mean, the extent to which they would be able or willing to share that information is kind of irrelevant. What I'm saying is, I think what you're saying is, had it gone the way that you thought that it was going to go.
No, I mean, that too. But what, yeah, right. Okay, yeah. But when I went there, it wasn't ever supposed to be an information sharing. I mean, I was fine with that because, like I've said in the podcast, we're totally open. We don't really have any secrets. What I meant is that if the detective had ever actually followed through on his agreement to do an interview with us here in the studio, we wouldn't have a need to actually air this sort of interrogation, because that would be, I would assume, weaker than the information that, you know, the quality that we would have in an actual conversation that's serious and normal.
Sure. You're illustrating that it was months after the interrogation audio existed that you even decided to use it.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Sure. Because we had nothing. I mean, we still have, you know, exactly. It's December 2018 right now, and I asked to do an interview with him in July 2017, so we're still waiting. And so, yeah, what was it, November we used that? So we waited, 14 months?
Right,
And then they were like, well, okay, well, that's what we have, and so that's what you get. And I hate that, because I don't think people were really that informed by it, to be honest. Like, I don't think people learned a lot about, well, maybe we learned a lot about the things they don't know, I guess, but we didn't really learn a lot about facts in that about the case.
We might not have learned everyone's sort of best effort either. I mean, it is also fair to say that the detective has reached out to you,
right.
and essentially apologized for the sort of demeanor that he employed both at that time and later in telephone conversation.
Right, and we're good. I mean, that in terms of my opinion, like that's no longer an issue. I say we're good. We've never actually met again, but we're good in the sense that I don't care, you know? Like, I personally might, you know, I can't necessarily prove this, but I think that you can hear from some of the comments he made that it's not really Jeff Haynes who was the one who wanted to interact with me that way in the first place, you know? I mean, I think he sort of let his guard down enough to inform me that it was the sheriff, right? Who was basically assigning him to do these sort of, like, unfortunate tasks, I guess. You know, so anyway, I guess for that reason, I always feel a need to sort of defend him in a sense that, like, I don't think this was his idea, I guess, right. Put it that way. So
before we talk about episode 12, which we probably should do, we have a guest who has been waiting patiently to participate in the conversation. And while she doesn't generally participate on the episodes of the podcast by sharing her opinions or thoughts or, you know, or actually investigating anything, she has definitely shared her view of events and stories and places and landmarks throughout this story, as she is the person behind the camera for all of the imagery associated with the program that was not file photos and family photos and, you know, scans that have been taken. And that's Brittany Greider. Brittany, hello.
Hi.
Welcome finally to the conversation, and apologies for making you wait so patiently, but for what it's worth, it does seem as though you were interested.
Of course I'm interested. Oh, no apology is necessary.
Well, tell us, if you don't mind, what you thought you were getting into when George initially approached you about going with him to Quinlan in order to capture some imagery associated with this missing person's story that he's been covering.
Well, I'm a bit of a true crime podcast nerd, and so for me, it sounded like an adventure and an opportunity to get the skinny on a story before everyone else. So I was excited to go over there and see the places that he was talking about and be able to photograph them.
And there were a lot of, I think the initial imagery included a lot of long throw lights and shadows, and how much of that was canned and how much of that was, this really is what it looks like at night?
Well, I kind of need to take a peek at some of the shots.
Yeah, let's pull up. So we have an Instagram.
Should I turn this?
Please.
Yeah, an Instagram page.
Follow you. That's our camera, so we can follow you. Follow you around the room.
Yeah, this is like a camera, but for your ears. Is how it works.
It's a fantastic description of a microphone.
I don't know. You know, she's not usually dealing with the
outside. It's outside her typical. She's setting.
She's
so
viewing this from a different
angle, so to speak.
Lens,
The lens, yeah.
God, we're bad.
Okay, let's have all the photo puns right now.
Sorry. Okay, so
no need to apologize. I love puns. I support it wholeheartedly.
Good. Well, you're in the right place for what we don't edit out. The Instagram account is instagram.com/buried.radio. And we post all sorts of pictures there, but one third of them are Brittany Greider's amazing
original photography.
Yeah.
Apologies because we can't show you on the podcast the images that we're talking about, but if you go to the web address that George just mentioned.
Yeah, you can pick up your phone right now and go to our Instagram page. And I think it's cool. It's one of my favorite things. It's probably my favorite social media page for our podcast. I think it's cool, primarily because Brittany is an amazing photographer. Anyway.
Oh, thanks so much. So looking back on these images, so some of the images, we had to light them, and the vehicle that we had lights. So we
on
were
on the
like,
front, right?
Yeah, on the front. Yeah, headlights. Oh my gosh.
This is what you were afraid of was going to happen, what you
yes,
said, right?
Yes, 100%. Now. Exactly. 100%.
Why she didn't want to do
like,
this.
What's that thing called? Oh yeah, headlights.
Yep.
Okay, so when we were going to these places, some of them already were lit and had like street lights or just lamps, some sort of way that I could expose to be able to show the location. And other locations were just really dark. And in order to be able to show what was there, we had to point like the car lights onto the scene in order to show it. And, you know, it just so happens to look a little bit creepy whenever you do
that. I started to say is even without that, I wanted to iterate that it doesn't seem to me that you used like a creepy filter. It looks like you took photographs of what it looks like while you're there under those conditions.
Yeah. Some of them, most of them probably, I'd say like the Quinlan City Hall, we didn't utilize any lights for that. That's just it. That's what it is. The Welcome to Hot Cove, we definitely pointed the car at the direction of the sign in order to see it because it was just too dark there. I don't think there was a light that was there to expose for it. Same with the Hot Cove open. Did we point lights at this one?
I want to say you stood like there forever and did like a really long exposure, but I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
There's street lights around there too.
Yeah. I think I remember it being exceptionally dark though.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't think I had a tripod. Did I have a tripod?
I think you had the one thing.
Monopod? Oh, yeah. I did have a monopod for one of them. Okay.
Yeah.
For those of you listening at home, a monopod is like a tripod, but it just has one leg.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You will learn something when you listen to this podcast.
Exactly. You know what I'm remembering right now, by the way? This is so interesting because I had not put this together, but it's really perfect timing for you to be on this. So let's just erase what I just said and pretend that we did this on purpose. To bring Brittany on right after we aired episode 11, or soon after we aired episode 11, because we actually took those pictures soon after I got interrogated by the sheriff, and you probably will remember how freaked out I was, like, walking around these places. Whereas the second time we went out taking pictures, I was obviously back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that just had that weird realization right now that
was the Easy Mart in our first trip. Yeah, exactly. Because you were extremely nervous about that. I'm like, this doesn't seem really that creepy to me.
It's a convenience store,
you know,
right?
I support you.
Right, yeah. On the highway.
Yeah.
It'll be okay, George. We'll get through this.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been, because I think it was like August that we did this, I want to say. And you, I remember the entire time you were really like kind of like weirded out by my sort of paranoia, I think.
Maybe not weirded out. Maybe concerned.
Yeah. It was like we were taking pictures of the police station, the Justice of the Peace office. I mean, it wasn't just I was afraid to walk around in Hunt County. That was not the issue. But the issue was that it's the middle of the night. We're taking pictures of government institutions. And like I just got interrogated and accused of a bunch of crimes by the same people, basically. And so still, I really don't know what I was so worried about. But I was definitely like, can we go? Can we go to the next spot? You know, but it's funny. Weird. Mm-hmm. Memories. Mm-hmm. See, I forgot about that, too. I also got that out of my mind.
So many things that you've blocked out.
Wow.
We'll draw them back up for the buried lead.
I think the one that probably creeped me out the most, I don't think we've posted it online yet.
Which one is it?
I think it was like Cody's old property or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we've used that in an episode, but it's not on Instagram, I don't think.
Because that area, that, you know, that was a little bit concerning.
Yeah, you used...
It was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you spent a long time trying to capture that that scene because it was super dark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just grass.
Yeah, but and, you know, try not to trespass or get shot.
Right, exactly.
That area was super creepy, and I didn't... Like, it was hard to be able to capture, like, what exactly was going on, because you're telling me, okay, it's not that hill, it's this thing right there.
Right.
Nope, not that. No, Brittany, this one. This thing right there.
Yeah.
Okay, try it again.
So what we're talking about is the exact place that we were just talking about at the beginning of this episode, which is the lot that's next to the fenced-in area where Cody's property was located. And it's the same place that Glenn, Patricia, and I went to in episode 10 to see the indention in the ground, the pile of dirt, and, you know, all these different landmarks. That they believe are potentially, you know, theoretically associated with Carrie, if her body's indeed in that general area,
which was again a reference to the hitchhiker story.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And so Glenn is convinced that she was pointing at this lot where Brittany was taking a picture, whereas Patricia is convinced that she was pointing at Cody's property, and I'm convinced that those properties didn't look any different from each other and were joined quite naturally, and so it doesn't
at the
matter.
Point that's photographed in the photograph, right?
Well, no, different photograph now, but now there's a fence there, so it's obvious, but back in the day it wasn't.
The value here obviously being you through your lens, folks get to see these places whenever they explore beyond their podcast subscription, where they can listen to the things that we present.
Yeah.
They are able to sort of see some of these places and get a feel for. And I think for a lot of people, that imagery is what their mind draws up whenever they hear about these places. Because, I mean, that was intentional on our part. But it's also legitimate, right? We didn't, none of this was staged necessarily. It just happened to be nighttime when you went to take these photos.
Right.
So, like you joked about earlier, fair question, does the sun shine in the Tewakini area?
No, it really doesn't. I'm sorry.
It wasn't actually really cloudy. It's cloudy the second time we went there, I think. Brittany and I took a second trip once we realized that this podcast was running out of pictures, because it's been able to go on, you know, longer than a couple episodes, which is good. And I told Brittany that we were running out, and so we went on another run to some of the newer learned about landmarks, which was Terrell was one, right?
Mm-hmm. Correctional facility. Well, no, the
oh gosh, yeah, that was creepy.
I took Brittany to a place that, yeah, speaking of being paranoid and weird, the roles were totally reversed the second trip when Brittany and I took a little stroll around what's the politically correct word?
Correctional hospital.
Asylum.
Okay. Well, what's the term that was on the back side of the sign for
yeah
it?
For the it was like It was horrible, wasn't it? It was like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, where they just recut the boards and like
flipped
the
sign. And they
turned it over. Uh-huh. Yeah, and in the back it was like it said like retardation.
Yeah,
I think, and
yeah.
Yeah, whereas on the front it's like mental health or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So if you're leaving, then you can kind of.
Yeah, you can like
when you're coming.
Oh no,
like,
you
oh,
have to like go up behind it and like yeah. kind of look, because there's some brick behind it. You can't just I don't think see without
yeah.
well, getting up behind
she,
it.
She's talking about the Terrell State Hospital, right? And mm-hmm. Which is a mental health facility. There's a connection to the story that we're going to be getting into in some of the next few episodes. And Brittany went there with me to get some advanced photos to use. And
so she really knows what's coming more than the rest of us. Brittany, why don't you tell us what's coming in this?
Well, my question for Brittany was like, why are you so freaked out when I would jokingly say that I was going to leave you there?
Because I've seen American Horror Story, like the the asylum one. And so, yeah, that to me was creepier.
She's already admitted she's a fan of these true crime.
I know, yeah. I know. So clearly I have issues.
She's predisposed to think the worst. So are you saying
all your fans have issues?
I didn't say that at all. I think that most of the, I think it would be true to say that a lot of the fans of this show are folks who are genuinely interested in this particular story. I think that it's entirely possible that because we are talking now about thousands of folks, that there are a lot of folks who are coming on board the podcast because of the kind of story that it is. You know, it sort of has the same feel as any other sort of true crime type podcast, only we're not generally expressing opinions within the thing. It's all, you know, reporting. It's news reporting. But I think that initially the initial folks, the folks who were on the bandwagon first, were folks who remember hearing a little bit about this,
right.
And they too probably like it. It sort of was jolted in them whenever this thing came out that oh yeah, whatever did happen to that woman who went missing, whatever did happen, didn't she have kids? I mean, that's been like the thing, the recurring thing. But didn't she have some kids? I want to say that she had some kids.
Yeah,
and then it's like, oh yeah, no, this is yes, and they've grown and they have been helpful in
extremely helpful,
you know, in the telling of the story of what might have happened. Of course, none of them were at a point where they could really intensely remember all of the circumstantial things, but they have been, they've provided access and so forth and so on. But and that's sort of what happens, right? Is like this even when it, like a tragic thing happens in a small town, and then time passes, and if it never gets resolved, then this is sort of what it looks like. And unfortunately, this is far from the only kind of story like this. We're aware of that. I mean, we don't set out to tell all of them, but we definitely have touched on other similar stories throughout the telling of this one. But that's just, it's sort of the playbook, the template, right? Like a tragic thing happens, and then time passes, and then people sort of sometimes remember, sometimes they misremember, sometimes like maybe it's worth following up on this or following up on that. But if it's not clear that any one entity was actually trying to piece it all together, then what you have is someone like George who is like literally like his teeth itch that these things don't all exist in one place and that there's not one central location for all of the facts, because this thing is or should have been important, more important than it seems to have been.
Yes.
From an official capacity.
Yeah. I mean, not only officially, right? It's like there's so many people who didn't do anything that you would think would do things, you know, teachers, family, cousins, you know, neighbors. Like it wasn't like, I don't think they were out like waving signs outside the sheriff's office asking, where's Carrie? You know, it's, I don't mean to generalize about everyone, you know, who knew her. Of course, there are many people who were concerned. Her sister filed a report with the Taro police. You know, obviously her kids look, you know, were asking questions their entire lives and still do, but it's just amazing to me that the word didn't spread further.
Episode 12 was all about the call that you had with Cody from some 100 yards or so away.
Yeah.
Where you, when you had made the sojourn up to Tishomingo, Oklahoma, in order to locate him and have that conversation. How'd that go?
As well as it.
I mean, we've heard it.
Yeah, exactly. We've all heard it. It's the holidays, okay? We're recording this before 12 comes out. We're going to put it out after 12. All right, the secret's out. I'm telling them.
Right. You're just really throwing the curtain back on but, how we make the magic happen here.
Exactly. So, in any case, I was there when I talked to Cody, so I can tell you what happened, whether it's been produced or not. And what did happen is that Cody kind of like warmed up to me, I thought. You have heard these files, so...
No, it sounds very much like he was initially was like, who are you and what do you want? And honestly, and it wasn't like a, you know, not in a rude way. I mean, you would all of us would be that way. Oh, somebody's nagging me about a thing.
Right.
And he did, in fact, present at one point, you know, honestly, I'm tired of dealing with this. A lot of people have talked to me over the years about this. Right. And it's getting to a point where I'm annoyed by it.
Yeah.
And I mean, we think we're annoyed whenever we get unwanted calls. Imagine if you're getting unwanted calls from people who are wanting to ask you about something, you know, that was potentially scarring and tragic in your life over and over again.
Not just that, but I mean, in Cody's case, the detective traveled there and literally accused him of murdering someone.
Right.
So to have someone call like 9 months later and say like, hey, I'm in town too and want to meet up, you know, it's...
Let's talk about this uncomfortable thing.
Yeah. But I mean, I think what... It's hard to convince someone of before they see evidence of, you know, is that like, you're not here for the same reason. I have different questions.
Admittedly, it's hard to trust the media anyway. I mean, for a lot of people who, they just don't know if the question being asked, whenever they answer it, is going to be portrayed in the way that they think. Like, a lot of us have trouble just conveying what's inside our heads anyway. So yeah, people can feel like it's a slippery slope.
Yeah,
and they got to be able to trust the person they're talking to. But I think what's evident from the call is over the course of the call, he began to trust that what you were doing was attempting to piece together a story.
Yeah,
rather than to figure out, you know, whether or not did you do it.
Right, right.
Law enforcement asked you and you said no, but I'm asking you.
Yeah, maybe your answer will be different. yeah, no. It was funny that we had that sort of bonding experience in the call where he was saying, you know, that Haynes is all in my face saying you murdered her, you know, and I'm like, hey, yeah, I know, I was just like in his office like 3 weeks ago and he was like, basically accusing me of something way less serious, but it was still obviously like pretty freaky. Now I think Cody has a lot more experience being interrogated than I do, probably for good reason in many cases. Yeah, but you know, it was kind of funny that we had both had a similar experience with the same guy within the last, you know, 9 months. There's so much more to say about this issue than we can discuss in this episode, of course. But, like, it's clear to me that Cody seems to have, like, a lot of resentment towards Carrie, which I find interesting because she's been gone for so long. And it just still seems that, like, her supposed, you know, cheating on him.
Well, there's, I think, the component that is difficult to kind of put your finger on there is that it seemed as though he genuinely cared for her. And it you almost get, if you take away all this other stuff and you look at it like, you know, a couple that ended up breaking up, it seemed as though he, you know, maybe sustained a little bit of heartbreak over that whole deal and names, you know, very specific personality traits and traits about her that he didn't appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I still have really complicated sort of feelings about that conversation. And I mean, I think Cody has a very complicated, I mean, let's just for the moment assume that he's certainly innocent, which is probably what most people should be doing anyway until other evidence is presented. But the way he acts is sort of like with exasperation about the whole issue, I guess, right? It's like that, like with her, it was just too much. Everything's too much, both with her back then and then now it's too much. It's like he can't deal with it. It's sort of like the way he always characterizes both the scrutiny of himself now and like the end of his relationship, which I can't help but wonder like if one influenced the other, you know, well, in his mind.
And two, like some of the things that have been presented, not necessarily in a way that sort of presents evidence, but definitely helps to get a better picture of Cody and who Cody is. That exasperation is present elsewhere, right? I mean, we've heard a story from Glenn that talks about sort of the way that he, reacted when the subject came up before.
Right.
You know, the context sort of was illusional. Illusional with an A.
With an A, right.
But it was, you know, it also fits the profile of a person who is exasperated by the story.
Yeah. Which I get. I get it, man.
As a guy who's been living and breathing this story for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, as someone who's definitely on the outside, I don't deal with the day to day, you know, dealing with it that her kids do and her siblings do, and I'd be a lot crazier than they are, I think, if I did. But
Brittany, thank you for coming in and allowing us to have this conversation mostly in front of you, but also with you.
Absolutely, I appreciate the opportunity to produce photos that help generate an interest in the story and for people to follow along and help to search for her.
I mean, I really thought that when we were first kicking around the idea of making a podcast, you know, it was really important to me that the presentation indicate how serious we were, or how serious the story is and good the story is, and how different this is going to be than your run-of-the-mill, you know, little project. And so I thought one of the ways to really indicate that was to have these, you know, extremely professional and artistic photos. And I think that that really helped, I don't know, brand it accurately, I guess.
You solidifies know. The reputation.
Exactly.
So we're blaming you for how professional we look.
Dadgummit.
You can find the program online on all of your favorite, or nearly all of your favorite podcast aggregators. It's called Buried. You should subscribe already wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Facebook at Buried Radio. We're on Twitter at Buried Radio. We're on Instagram at buried.radio.
That's right.
And again, we appreciate everyone who has taken the time to listen to any of the episodes and provide any sort of feedback and share the story with anyone else who might have some interest. The idea being that this continues to be an open, cold case in Hunt County, Texas. And so, you know, it, as we always say, if there is a break in the case that we learn about, we will share it immediately. We yeah. don't have interest in dragging out the story. I mean, it's already decades old.
Yeah.
So the telling that it's getting right now is significantly, I think, more expansive than any treatment that it's gotten heretofore.
Yeah, great. Do we want to mention that we're going to take a brief pause for Christmas and holidays, or...
You just did.
The end.
Expect a short break
yeah.
through these holidays. This episode is dropping after Christmas, but then there will be a short break, a week or two, before we come back and bring you another preview for another exciting episode of Buried from 88.9 KETR and KETR.org. How's that?
Perfect.
Buried is a production of 88.9 KETR FM in Commerce, Texas, and of KETR.org. Its host and principal reporter is George Hale. Executive producer is Jared Knight, with production help from Emma Anderson. Theme music is composed and performed by Brad Davis, and cover art was designed by Crystal Sid. You can catch up on previous episodes at KETR.org/buried or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening. We're done. Buried Lady.